The Dr. Taz Show.
The podcast. Dr. Taz.
Your good health journey starts now. Here's Dr. Taz.
Welcome back to the Dr. Taz Show. Today we're going to tackle your creativity and your inner spark. Do you think you've lost it? Are you having trouble finding it? Well, I have with me Katie Goodman. Katie is going to be, I'm hoping she'll make us laugh, but she's going to be a real treat. She is an improv, basically has written a book on improvisation for the spirit, helping us find kind of our inner spark, how to unblock ourselves creatively. She has been described as a cross between Julia Cameron and Ben Stein, a nurturing creative coach with a wry edge. So I think we're ready for a different and user-friendly approach to personal growth. We're going to talk to Katie and see what advice she has to give us. Welcome, Katie.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we are thrilled to have you on the show, and we really want to just jump right in and talk about exactly what you do, how you got there, and what advice do you have for us?
Well, I was an actress for 15 years. I still am. And I started teaching a lot of improv comedy. And I noticed, I was also a yoga teacher at the time. And I noticed there was such an incredible cross between when I had been trained as a yoga teacher and what I was teaching in improv. Things like being present, flexible, both literally and figuratively, with yoga and improv, and trusting yourself, surrendering, you know, having non-attachment to the goal, and just living in the flow.
And,
yeah, exactly. And I noticed that those were just completely compatible. And so I started looking at improv as a self-help tool, and I started teaching and speaking about it and actually playing games with people who had never played before. And one of the things that I found really interesting is, you know, the expression, the way you do anything is the way you do everything. And so when people would come and they would do improv with me for the first time, you know, maybe they'd never done it or they did a little bit of acting as a kid or something, you kind of fall to your lowest common denominator when you're doing something new. So for, you know, for example, maybe you're the kind of person who just always waits for somebody else to go first and to, you don't want to jump in, or you're someone who feels responsible for everybody and you always take over. You kind of see that come up right in the beginning of one of the workshops. I mean, honestly, like within 45 seconds. And because we go to like the thing that's most, our trusted crutches. And then what I was able to try to work through with people is, first of all, stopping and saying, well, what was going through your mind right here? And when you, you know, either didn't look like you were trusting yourself or whatever, you know, is this what was going on? And then how do we try to break those habits, and how do we get unblocked, and how do we have a safe place to kind of try doing it in a different way? And so, then I eventually
Okay, so I just want to paint the scene for our listeners. So you are an actress. How old were you when you went into acting?
Oh, second grade.
Second grade. I always say we know we can spot them young. So you're in second grade, and
well, it was funny because I actually I starred in and directed Really Rosie, which is a play about a precocious little girl starring and directing in her own movie. So it was a typecast.
Oh my gosh, I love it. And so when did you make the crossover to improv, and what sort of
I'd always done it because as an actor, you always take improv classes for training.
Right.
And then I've been in it, the same improv troupe, which is very unusual, with the same people for 20 years. And that never happens. It's been kind of a unique experience. But I still am an actress, and I still have a show called Broad Comedy, which is a an all-women's comedy show with original material and songs and stuff. So I use it all the time. This is, you know, it's kind of like all these entrepreneurs who do 72 different things. We kind of can't help.
I wouldn't know any of those.
Would you?
Nope, don't know one. So you still have, so that, I'm going to have to check that out. So that's broadcomedy.com. So that's a show for women essentially, or?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of men in the audience, but it's a little bit more political, especially right now. But it's using a lot of women's issues and mom issues and things about the environment and And it's just a fun show. We tour it all around the country. So I'm actually opening off Broadway next month.
Oh my goodness, I'll have to come see you.
Yeah. Are you in New York? Oh, great.
A lot. I'm there almost weekly, so I will definitely have to check it out. I'm looking forward to it. But okay, so you're an actress, you're doing improv because that's what apparently actors and actresses do, which I did not know. But but you take this skill of improv and you translate it into a tool for helping people find their inner spark and deal with their inner critic. So walk me through that, because one of the joys of my work, one of the things that makes me get out of bed in the morning and just gets me super excited is helping people make that transition from where they are to who they really should be or need to be or were meant to be. But I use the medicine of language, or my language, excuse me, is medicine. You're using improv, and it sounds like comedy, to get people there. So I want to understand this. This is really important to me. I want to really understand this because I know what I do from a technical, geeky, nerdy standpoint of trying to get people there. How do you walk people down that road and that bridge?
Well, the part that you'll probably appreciate is the neuroscience part, which is that what we use in improv is both your right brain and left brain at the same time. And that's great. I mean, you're always using a little bit of each all the time. You wouldn't be able to speak, but the idea behind this is you're trying to uncensor yourself so that you can have access to all the creative goodies. At the same time, you're picking and choosing, because if you were completely, well, first of all, if you're completely uncensored, it might just be like a big mishmash.
That wouldn't be good.
Making. Yeah.
Right.
But so you're trying to make these.
Although many people we know today are completely uncensored.
Yes,
they seem to be doing just fine.
Eating at 4 in the morning.
Exactly. So, wow. That's exactly what I was thinking. But anyhow.
Yes, you're going to like my show. So the trick, though, is to not get bogged down in one or the other, right? So that you have your sensor or, you know, your right brain saying, like, this isn't good, it's a critic, or it has to be very linear like this. How do I pick and choose which direction this scene is going to go in or this idea is going to go? I don't know. I mean, certainly as an entrepreneur, it's hard. I have so many ideas for projects. And as we all, you know, or even like if you're parenting or something and you just have a slew of things to choose from all the time, and it's very overwhelming. So trusting yourself, and some of it's sixth sense and some of it's rational, you know, so you're mixing those two skills together all the time, and that's tricky. So that's what improv kind of helps with. You can see right before your eyes if it's working or not. But one of the things is you have to give up the goal a bit. So if you have a spark, and you can try to get out of your own way, I think is a great phrase. We're always all sort of in our own way, both creatively and logistically.
yes, definitely.
In terms of accessing, you know, our creativity, and making decisions about our lives. So one of the things is it trains you to be spontaneous enough and to be comfortable and actually enjoy spontaneity, so that it becomes a daily part of your life as opposed to, over here, when I'm on the beach 1 week a year on vacation, I'm spontaneous with my kids. Well, that, you know, that's not really the way to live. You want to bring that into your life all the time. So practicing improv, or some of the exercises that I use in my book, are trying to bring it into a practice of daily life so that you're sparking joy, you're alive and aware, and you're trusting yourself, you're taking creative risks, and you're very present just all the time, so that it becomes easier to just be a creative person all the time. And people kind of look at me sometimes when they're new to this, and they're like, yeah, that's not going to happen. And it's the idea isn't like, okay, next week, you know, you put down my book, or you take a workshop, or you try this, and presto. You know, we're all evolving all the time. And I have, you know, there's a section in there, too, about getting lost. And one of the ideas I really like this idea is that you have to practice getting lost so you can re-find yourself or evolve, like, constantly. I mean, we're doing that throughout life. We're just shedding skin after skin. That helps us stay creative. It helps us reignite those sparks, and it helps us stay present to who we are now, not who we were a year ago, or what even, you know, a lot of us are taking baggage of what our parents thought of us, or the culture or anything. So the idea is, again, to just make sure that this is a practice. Now, of course, it doesn't have to be improv. It can be anything. It could be pottery. But it's nice to have something creative because that taps into that part of your brain that's a little bit more awake in that area of the, like, who am I now conversation. What do I want?
Yeah, and I'm in just sort of thinking through, too. I mean, this is my guess and just my own personal experience and then working with patients. I mean, this is not tomorrow, I'm going to do this today and be this tomorrow. This is a journey and it's a skill and it's something that you kind of have to work at. You know, in the world of improv, you know, what is maybe one of the first things they teach you? Because some of what you're saying, silence the inner critic, you know, learn to be spontaneous. Yeah. I'm thinking about my listeners, and I bet I have a mom out there who is, you know, trying to get two kids to school, trying to get dinner on the table, trying to make it to work, and trying to multitask 50 million things throughout her day. And she's
right.
Probably rolling her eyes at us, being like, really? You want me to be spontaneous?
And
you
and
want
creative.
Me
like, I don't
to
have
be
time
in the
for
moment?
It.
Exactly. What yeah. are you talking about? I'm just trying to make it through the
exactly.
day.
Exactly.
So,
and I can relate to that as a mom myself.
I was going to say, yes, I am too. And I mean, yeah. I can completely relate to that. And it's taken me a long time to understand how to build this into my life and to build it into my schedule. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think I'm just now getting it, you know, even mm-hmm. though I've done a lot and I'm proud of a lot of what we've done, but I think I'm just now starting to understand it. So I can't imagine what else is like locked in my brain that I haven't allowed to be present.
Right.
But
right.
what would you tell that mom or me who, you know, me 5 years ago, you know,
well,
what would you tell
idea,
us?
Like, I think the idea is that all of these tools apply to your daily life to make it easier. And so nothing goes according to plan, right? Especially
right.
parenting. My God, I have a 14-year-old. So, I mean, just nothing is ever what you expect it's going to be, from where they get into college to,
right.
you know, oh my God, we got into the preschool, but they aren't potty trained, and you can't go to the preschool and live that. So you're constantly improvising and having to be flexible. And there's two ways to go through life. You can go through life bumping into these walls and getting pissed off and frustrated and suffering, or you can be somebody who bounces off, I've never used this metaphor before, but bounces off the walls
mm-hmm.
and goes in a different direction. And gosh, if you can figure out a way that is actually, this is going to sound obnoxious too, but like a fun or
mm-hmm.
interesting, or you're just simply not judging all the experiences all the time as bad, frustrating, you're just going to be a much happier person and a better, nicer person to be around, and everything's going to just work better for you. But that, again, it doesn't mean like you're never grumpy, tired, you know. So the idea is just some perspective. And I think the reason I went into comedy in the first place is because what I love about comedy is when you're laughing at something, you're by definition stepping back and having perspective on it. If you don't think it's, like, think of the things we don't think is funny, you know, like when I was just thinking about when our kids do something, you're like, that's not funny. It's because we're so totally attached to the situation we're not able to step back from it. So cultivating a practice of stepping back and saying, oh my God, this is so ridiculous and absurd. My life is, you know, and being
right.
able to laugh and be lighthearted. I love your term, spark joy. All of those things are going to make you happier, and they're going to make everything work better. Again, though, I do want to reiterate, it's not going to happen every minute, every day. We're just like, it's like that book, 10% Happier. You know, you're really
mm-hmm.
just going for a little nudge in a more playful direction in life.
So what I'm taking from you then is that one of the key lessons of improv and the way we can translate it to our daily lives is to take any given moment and look for the joy or the comedy, the laughter within it, step back for a second before we get so involved, you know, in what is happening at any given moment. Maybe take a step back and look at really what's happening. Is that what they teach in improv typically? Is that kind of the first, if I was
yeah.
going to go out and be in?
You know what, when you ask me what I wouldn't say that that's the first rule. I will tell you what the first rule of improv is, and you've probably heard this, which is the yes and principle. So the idea is I'll give you an example. Someone's on stage, I played this part recently where someone was, I walked, I can't remember exactly how this all went, because I walked in, you know, sometimes it happens so fast in improv, you're like, wait, mm-hmm. what just happened? So, you know, I walked in, I thought I was in a hospital, and I said to the other character, do you recognize this? And I point to my nose, and I was thinking, like, there's this hot doctor was the other character, and he had redone my nose or something. And he turned to somebody else and said, oh, my God, nurse, it's the nose we were missing. She's stored it on her face. And so I was like, okay, you know, so really quickly readjust, you know, to this completely silly scenario. Uh-huh. Out goes, like, my hot doctor idea, you know, and, like, that I'm flirting. And in comes, like, this emergency situation that's completely ridiculous. Gosh. And if I had, this is such a goofy example, but if I had held on to that idea, my original idea, it wouldn't have really worked with what they were doing. So every single thing we do in our lives is a collaboration, right? Even if you're a monk. Yep. So you're with people, you're communicating with people, you're raising children together, you're working together. Even if you're writing, like, in a garret where there's nobody else, you're still collaborating with people from your past that are a memory. The culture, what you're reading in the news. So you're nothing in a vacuum. So the very first rule of improv is yes and, which means if somebody comes up to you and they say, hey, mom, you know, I dropped my contact lens. You don't say, I'm not your mother, and you don't say, what contact lens? You say, you know, you go along with it. You yes it, and then you add something else to it. So, like, the classic example is, hey, look at that pink elephant. You don't want to say, what pink elephant? You say, oh, yes, and it's standing on my mother-in-law or something. So you are yesing it, and you're anding, and you're adding to it, because otherwise you're just putting up roadblock after roadblock. And
that's such a
great metaphor, right? I mean, it's exactly what we do all day long when we get screwed up in our relationships. So it doesn't have to be like, I think you should take this job you hate. And you're like, yes. I mean, that's not mm-hmm. what we're talking about. But it's like accepting the idea that the other person has and then either taking it in a different direction or just simply adding onto it, but as opposed to roadblocking and what's called negating everything all the time. And I think a lot of us are in habits of doing that. It could be self-protective. I mean, there's a lot of reasons we do that.
And do you think women do that more than men necessarily?
I don't know the answer to that. You know, people ask me that a lot. I tend to hang out with some very creative, open men because I'm in theater. Mm-hmm. So, and my husband's like a great feminist, and he, you know what I mean? He's not like in the business world. So I have heard that that may be the case, but I think I probably shouldn't try to answer that. But you did ask me about gagging, about the inner critic. And one of the chapters
yes,
in my book
the inner critic.
Called,
yes, that's important.
So
we
one of the chapters in my book
inner
is...
Critic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. So it's called Gag Your Inner Critic. And it's like a whole 12-step... I mean, not 12-step, like, recovery, but like, let's call it 10-step program of how to kind of deal with your inner critic. And I know you know this. Therapeutically, your inner critic at one point was probably benevolent. Like, it was trying to keep you safe, right? So... Mm-hmm. Let's say, you know...
But I don't remember when that was.
Well,
I don't.
Right. Now it's just a pain in the butt.
Right.
So, and it's in your way, and it's absolutely keeping you from sparking any kind of joy. So, and the way to figure out what your inner critic is, if people don't know what I'm talking about, is it's usually something that stops you from doing something, or it's talking to you in negative self-talk. So, you know, don't go apply for that job. Don't ask that person out on a date. You'll get rejected, or you can't cook. I mean, I'm just trying to think of anything that it says to you, you can't do these things. You're no good. You're not smart enough.
Right.
You're not good enough. So the reason that you even have that is because something happened at some time where you were embarrassed. And it's kind of, you know, the whole ice flow theory, right? So if we get socially... rejected in our caveman brain, you can probably explain this better than I can. You are afraid. I mean, you literally could die, right? If you're rejected by your clan. So our little reptilian brain is, or our caveman brain is just worried about being rejected to the extent that it seems like death, which is why performance anxiety is like a real thing. I mean, all this stuff, it's like they're big. So your inner critic said, don't try these things because you could get rejected, and I'm protecting you from that. But it doesn't sound that way to us. It just sounds like you're dumb, you're bad, you're whatever.
Right, right.
Which isn't really useful anymore. It just makes us feel bad. And then we don't take creative risks in our lives at all. So and it's a little bit more involved in the book, but what I try to walk people through is, you know, thank it for doing its job and fire mm-hmm. it, basically, or retrain it. So you have like an inner coach or whatever, you know, cheesy word you want to call it. And for a while, I jokingly had like this inner coach that was like, you know, this fabulous gay man who was like, you look amazing, you know, and like, mm-hmm. he would just like compliment me all the time.
So, I like that.
And everybody comes up with something different. Like, I really love having an image and a name, uh-huh. maybe, you know. And having it be just very, either, and, you know, you don't have to go overboard the other way, like, you're amazing at everything, because then you will be disappointed, you know. What you need is somebody right. who's more like a trainer who is practical. So it's non-judgmental, neutral language. So mm-hmm. something like, you know, last time you applied for that job, you didn't really prepare or you didn't have these things in place. Why don't you go take a class on this or work with a business mentor and then go back and do it? That's like not judgy at all, right? That's
mm-hmm.
good
stuff.
That's
pretty safe, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the stuff that we want our inner critic to turn into an inner coach to do. And then, but the first step of it is just even noticing that you've got this voice going so much of the time. So that's kind of one of the processes. It, you know, again, it's not overnight. It takes a little while to do that. But once you start noticing that you're doing that, it's kind of hard to stop noticing, and I think that's really helpful.
Well, that gets us right back to neuroscience. And one of the things I firmly believe in is that you can retrain your brain. You can retrain this voice. You're doing it through improv. I love the idea, and I hope everyone caught that. But, you know, the kind of the two quick things, not quick, but two things to grab onto is the yes and. So when something comes up, you know, say yes, yes meaning acceptance, but and meaning your own twist on things. How would you twist
right.
it? How would you change it? How would you individualize it, essentially? So that's one thing that, I mean, even I can continue to use, and I hope everybody else does. And then the second one is, you know, your inner coach who retrains, not necessarily silence, because we've read so much and talked so much about silencing the inner critic, and that's not easy. But I like the idea, the visual idea of retraining your inner critic, where literally you think of hiring a coach, a trainer, you know, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it, you know, a counselor that literally comes into your head and evaluates that critical voice. And I think those two tools in themselves can really push all of us so far. I mean, one thing I've noticed with patients and again with myself is that this is work. You know, this is not, you know, this is not easy stuff. And
yeah.
thousands of stories I could tell, that, but I don't want to eat up a lot of time. But, you know, you can look within a family and you can have 3 or 4 children raised all within that family and same bad circumstances, same dysfunction, but one of them really makes it. And the difference is that one took the time to reprogram this inner critic. So the voices from childhood or from genetics or wherever they're coming from of I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy, I'm not pretty, I'm not this, I'm not that, I'll never be successful, you know, all those voices can go away, but it takes work and you have to retrain your brain, you know, and the science is proving that the brain is plastic. You can change the brain. This is just, you know, what Katie's offering today is yet another tool, you know, to help do that in a way that's kind of fun, you know, and makes you laugh.
Yeah.
So I think this is an incredible gift. And I would hope my listeners reach out. You know, sometimes I know I'm sure you guys get weary of hearing, you know, the terms think positively, you know, imagine good things and all that other good stuff. So this is a way to make all that language physical, make it active, make it actionable, so that you can really move forward and plunge into your life the way you were meant to and find that inner creativity. Katie, so they can find more out about you through the book, I know. So where can we find the book? And where can they learn more just about you in general and some of what you are offering?
Sure. So my comedy website is katiegoodman.com. And my sort of speeches and workshops and book is katiegoodmanconsulting.com, and it's K-A-T-I-E, Goodman. And I'm doing workshops around the country in really fun places like near Yellowstone or at a horse ranch and things like that. And then I also go, people can bring me in if they want to their company or a retreat. I do a lot of women's conferences, which I love. And mm-hmm. I both speak about it, but I also love to do breakout sessions and workshops and really let people actually play and experience it. Because it's one thing to really hear about it. Even when I speak, I still do some exercises at the tables because I can't help it. But I like people to have the actual experience of seeing it happen inside their body, in their head, for themselves. And then the book is called Improvisation for the Spirit. And you can just go to Amazon and just type in my name in the search bar, and they'll find that one. Right there.
Wonderful.
I also have a kid's book there that'll pop up. But as I said,
no, it's the kid's book.
Project.
I love
the
it. What's the name of the kid's book?
Actually, you know what's funny? The kid's book is fairly new, and we realized after we published it, when somebody reviewed it, that it's sort of an improv game. It's called Our Parents Went Out, and it's about these kids imagining, what terrible things could happen when their parents go out, and the babysitter's like, no, this is how your parents would solve it. And she comes up with these really creative solutions. And it's a giant yes and kids book. And we hadn't even realized that until someone reviewed it that way, saying, these improvisers wrote a kids book. And I was like, oh my God, duh. Of course.
Oh, what a great thing to teach our children to.
I know.
Think that's fantastic. You know?
Yeah, it was funny. It was funny.
Well, I think these are all such great points. Is there anything you want to leave our audience with, anything you really want them to hang on to remember? I mean, we've talked about such important things, I think.
Yeah, I guess the one thing that I would say is it's much easier to learn when you're playing because you're in your sort of childlike brain. And
yes.
If there's something you can find, whether it's improv or dance or any number of things that are creative or playful in like a physical way, I think we learn better when we're just moving our body. I'm sure you know this too, but in terms of your work, but we learn better when we're both moving and doing something childlike and doing something new. And that wakes up all kinds of good parts of our brain. And then it's not such like a chore to try to better ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like self-help movement sometimes can make us all get a little crazy. And then this way, it's just like, no, I'm just playing. And then, ha, 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 we've taught you something too, you know?
I mean, I couldn't have said it better, honestly. I mean, I think, you know, again, you would appreciate this one last story, I promise. But I'm a little tiny bit of a workaholic, but I love what I do. But I remember I was struggling with some decision-making on some things. We were in New York. My children were with me and couldn't come up with an answer, was scheduled, you know, back to back to back on meetings and different things. And finally, I had set aside time to be with the kids in the evening, and we were going to go see a Broadway show. So, you know, we head on over, I think it was The Lion King, and we're sitting there. And in the middle of the show, I had solutions to like three different things that had been bothering me or struggling with. And it was simply because my brain had time to rest and it was actually having fun. So
yeah.
For many of us, you know, it's so important to remember like that play, like, you know, our childlike play brain brings solutions. It enhances our lives. And even when we're raising children, it helps make their lives better. So if we can bring that back, I think we've gotten so far away from it, even in the way our children are raised today. But if we can bring that back, I think that in itself would spark creativity. It would help us all find our joy and kind of sort of set us free to a certain extent and enjoy the day to day rather than dreading it or, you know, really having trouble moving through it.
Yeah, well, that was really well said. Yeah.
It was a true personal story.
Yeah.
Well, Katie, thank you so much for taking the time. And this has been fun. I encourage everyone to grab the book because we talk so much about, you know, trying to help everyone find that spark, trying to help them find their passion, their life's work, all those good things. But how about just having fun? And I think this book may be maybe a guide and an instructional way to have fun, to rest your brain, to tap into another part of yourself that will lead you to whatever it is you're supposed to do next. So, Katie, thank you so much for joining us. I really, really enjoyed it. We'll have to have you back on, and I will absolutely check out your show. And
ASAP
is coming out in the spring. Is that when?
It is April 20th. Yeah.
April 20th. All right. We'll definitely have to check that out. Well, thank you for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay. So nice to meet you. Bye-bye.
Take care.